I would like to talk to you on this paper, standard operator procedure for theta clearing. This is the first of standard operating procedures. Possibly there will be others, but they will all be referred to with a modification if they come out. I don't see at the moment much modification in view. Therefore, it's perfectly safe to make a talk here on standard operating procedure for theta clearing. Now, a great deal of the data in this will be found in Scientology 880, when that is available to you here. It is available right this minute, by the way, from the States. Very spectacular little volume. It has, on the cover of it, it has life equals EI over minus R times minus F. That's all it's got on the cover. Anyway, terrific amount of this material is in there, such as sub-zero tone scale, transfer of energy between facsimiles, and a lot of this and that. Well, now, the origination of standard operating procedure theta clearing has been done since, well, a long time ago, 1932, actually. And the first study on this subject was electronics. Electronics of the human mind, were there any? With the knowledge available at that time, anything that was known about the electronics of the human mind at that time could be summed up in one very eloquent word, bunk. It's a lot of hocus pocus and presto changeo and nonsense. And yet even at that time, the psychiatrists were rushing in where intelligent beings would fear to tread. And we're busily giving people electric shocks and all sorts of things. There's nothing more wonderful about the messed universe than the ability of some within it and some who created it to use everything for the wrong purpose so that it'll wind up wronger. This universe, a few million years from now, will probably be a solid lump of lead or something of the sort. Because it's tailor-made not to have anything run right. So in 1932, to look at the rather baffling picture of the human mind and what was known about the human mind, and to find out that people actually dared, without knowing anything about it, to avidly use electronics on it was actually more than could be borne. I started to work out. I just started to work it over and try to find out what colloquially cooked. And you know, I started in thinking that somebody knew something about it. I really did. I thought something was known, not about electronics, but about the human mind. You see, I could easily find what was known about electronics. It's very easy to find that. James Clerk Maxwell, Newton. There was character kicking around in those days by the name of Einstein. A fellow by the name of Planck hadn't gotten very busy yet. But Lorentz and Fitzgerald had already done their evil worst with C, the work for which everybody thinks Einstein gets... The work that everybody thinks Einstein did was done by Lorentz Fitzgerald, you think. And the work which Einstein did, nobody's been able to figure out, but he did it. it's very wonderful. It's resulted, everybody says, in an atomic bomb, except that the person whose work the atomic bomb came from was named Planck. The information about electronics was there, but it was just about as scrambled when it applies to this sort of thing as the people to whom it's credited. We find the most fascinating things about that. For instance, you had a young chap over here that did the basic work that made the electronic bomb, or the thingamabob bomb. It's hardly an atomic bomb. He explored the orbits and so forth. He has a comet named after him. Pretty interesting guy. If I remember rightly, one fellow, the most brilliant work that was done in this field was done by some fellow They don't think he was 21. And the British government, in its, we won't give a damn about that. That might be important, or somebody might consider it important. Sent him down to Gallipoli, and he died on the beach there in the barbed wire with a gut full of bayonets. With his work, one third done. So, anyway, the interesting part of this history was that nobody seemed to have gotten organized about it. You had boundless theories. And the second you went into the human mind, you would have a feeling that somebody knew something about the human mind. You just have this feeling because so many people spoke of it with such terrific authority. You know, they made up in sound volume what they lacked in information. And I was particularly amazed in 1947 to finally find at last and long length that psychoanalysis not only did not work, but made patients worse. That's how dumb I have been on this. I actually believed in 1932 because I studied Freud. I studied this under the tutelage of one of his more brilliant pupils, Commander Thompson. Commander Thompson was sent there by the U.S. Navy to study with Freud for a long period of time and to come back and do something with psychoanalysis with the U.S. Navy. He was practically the first and only authority in the United States. There is hardly anybody else in the United States did more than maybe get a curt thank you letter from Sigmund Freud. And they have taken these very curt thank you letters and have established their complete and full reputation since. That and a Viennese accent. You see, in the United States, it's a little bit different than here. You cannot possibly succeed in the field of the mind if you were to call it the field of the mind or anything like that. You would say, you have to have an accent. And the phonier, the better. You can get these accents, easy to pick up the accent. Matter of fact, it takes longer to pick up the accent than it does the information you use. But once the accent has been picked up, why, you could be a howling success. They're very wonderful. Well, anyway, not wandering off the subject a bit, imagine my embarrassment, because I'd gone on till 1947, supposing there was such a thing as a psychotherapy. Well, I had my off-brand of this sort of thing, which was mixed up with hypnotism and sort of based upon the endocrine reflex, the endocrine alarm reaction system of the body. And so on. I had a therapy worked out, and I just hadn't paid very much attention to Commander Thompson, I'm afraid. Because what I thought was psychoanalysis is suddenly discovered by me in 1947 to be a wild, wild distance from psychoanalysis. I was proceeding logically in one fashion or another, and I, as far as sexual activity is concerned and that sort of thing, it was just wonderful. I mean, Thompson had come back and had said so often that Freud really meant social, the social part of man, when he was saying sexual part of man. But I just skipped over all that, and an awful big joke on me. I had never turned around and found, when he said libido theory, exactly what he meant. He meant libido theory. He didn't mean the birds and bees or anything. He didn't mean anything off track. He meant sex. I've read his papers on it, and I read another interesting paper by that gentleman, by the way, that fascinates you, and you want to read it sometime. By the way, you want to pass a psychiatric examination, just get all Freud's papers and memorize the dates and the titles, and then go before the American College of Psychiatry, and you can become a psychiatrist. You don't have to know what's in them, or anything in them anyway. But this process is entirely different from what you think it was. Entirely different. You wouldn't really have any conception. Knowing what you do now and doing and working with the tools you're working with now, you wouldn't realize that you haven't just moved next door. You've moved over this range of mountains, off of this planet, into that galaxy, and over into another universe. I'm laying this down with a heavy axe in case anybody ever asks you to do a translation of Dianetics into terms that a psychoanalysis can understand. Don't ever track, because they're not related subjects. One's logical, and it works. And the other has to do with sex, and it's lots of fun. Now, that's bitter. But he fooled me. In that particular regard, I don't like to be fooled. In some line of work, of research, in engineering, you read a paper, and it says that Henry Blitzen has connected two electrodes with a 220-volt current running there, and has found out that this flow registered so-and-so on a voltmeter. You want to go and get a voltmeter and set up these conditions, you'll find out, sure enough, it registers so-and-so, thereby showing the resistance of wire is such-and-such or something. It'll do it every time. You can go around to every laboratory in the world where any electricity is available and rig up this equipment, and the voltmeter keeps on reading that same reading. Well, when you speak of a meter, you speak as close to accuracy as science has been able to come. Einstein's possible claim to fame will someday be these words: all an observer has a right to do is read the meter and report its exact result. Report its reading. That's what an observer should do. He should not interpret the meter at any time. And as long as a science hews to that line, you have reliable information. And if a science can't do that, don't bother to laugh up your sleeve. Guffaw out loud. Because it's not a science. It is not logical. It is not organized. And it has nothing to do with reality. But if somebody's happy little Jim Dandy screwball of delusion, beware a law which is stated at some length, and then of which it is suddenly said, but of course there are these exceptions. Just skip it. The second you see that thing that said these exceptions append to this law, throw it in the nearest ash can. And turn around yourself and find out what the law and the subject really is. Don't expect to find it in a textbook. You should be able to figure it out. And if somebody had told me a little more loudly in 1932, you have a perfect right to figure out these things yourself, we would have been a lot further ahead. Because that's the one thing the messed universe tells you not to do. Don't ever figure it out. It's very verboten. And it's a very, very good thing, even in the great honored realms of science. They'll tell you, well, of course we know. Of course, privately, we don't know what the hell we do know, but you never will know, but you are permitted to worship. You're permitted to worship before this great sacred cow. That's actually a primary myth. Now, every once in a while, you will find a professor who sparkles like a diamond. And he will rage and tear around and say, well, damn it, figure it out. Now, there's one such at MIT. He is the exception rather than the rule. They call him 99% Johnson. He said, if you can ask the question of the universe properly, it is already 99% answered. Now, I'm giving you here, really, little guide rules for research. These rules work. There's only one thing you want to know from anybody. What is the law and what does the meter read? And does the meter often read otherwise? The second he says, well, it's kind of like this, but Vior in Vienna, we have made a great study of this, and we have special meters that read the same all the time. They're painted meters. They have painted needles on them. And we have found that the great successes in the field of psychoanalysis stem from the fact that these meters always read success. Now, if you want to reduce it to science, oh, dear scientists, so's the garbage man scientist. He goes around picking up odds and ends and throwing them into a truck, too, without any order. No order, no discipline. Adler, young. Think of it. Think of these guys. Think of this guy, young. He obviously had some brains. Obviously did. And what does he run into? He runs into past lives. Crush. And now he figures out the great esoterics of past lives. Now we'll all cross ourselves. And the next thing you know, we're all studying Druidism. And that's all the past life there is. And that's everything. He must have been stuck on the track, being dumped in or out of some burned bowl of some tree or something. Or maybe when he was young, he was a blue baby. There's some purpose for this, but that's Jung. And Jung has done grave work. Don't mistake. He has put a lot of printers and engravers, given them a lot of employment. And right now he keeps a lot of library shelves from being empty. But it's just fantastic. It's fantastic. They could get a hold of the data. Breuer sat down and found out that if a woman talked long enough, her psychosis went kaboom. He found this out. He saw it happen. So instead of just keeping people talking long enough, Freud gets in there and pitches, and he says, it's all sex. He didn't even evaluate what they were talking about. If he'd just taken a continuous tape record and noted the exact moment in each case and just let enough people talk long enough, he would have found out there was a constant. He would have found out that they got well more or less around the certain points. And if you wanted to treat this with a scientific method, you actually could have taken endless tapes and made dictation notes on them and had them clicking through a time machine as to what they were talking about and when they got well. In other words, you kept a record, which is the first scientific rule. Keep a record. Now, you can keep the record in your head if you know what you're doing, but keep a record. Now, once in a while, somebody says to me, you don't keep a record of what you're doing. The hell I don't. I keep a record. This is actually a record. You wouldn't believe me if I told you there's practically no thought or research behind this. But there isn't. There isn't any thought or research, as you think of it, of taking endless notes, and then trying to find these and compare. That is not the way I do research. We found some of the basic fundamentals, and you know practically every word or thought along the track of figuring out an equation. And all it is a long mathematical equation. It has all arrived there by deduction and extrapolation from certain basic facts which were found to be true. And all this is a straight, direct breakdown of the axioms. Now, you'd hardly believe that, but that happens to be true. This is a breakdown of the axioms. If you recombine the axioms and look them over, you'll find out that it breaks down to this. It has to be that. It just has to be that, that's all. You look over the axioms. These axioms are true, and they were sweeping ahead and showing up things. And all the axioms were the constant data which had been turned out from the primary principle survived. And the mind is a computing machine which tries to resolve problems relating to survival. How simple. But actually, what we're doing here is a form of mathematics. It's a form of mathematics. Now, every once in a while, just for the hell of it, I put these things into practice in the material universe. They always work. They don't work because I say they work. You can put these things in the hands of some Chinese and send him to Hong Kong and we'll have cleared chinks. What's the difference? What's the difference then between this investigation, which we're doing, on which we're engaged, and past investigations? What's the essential difference? Well, it was one, the assumption that the problem could be solved. Now, boy, that is... is an arbitrary assumption. There is no reason to believe the problem can be solved, but we throw in the one arbitrary which was thrown in on the track ahead of survival. There's an arbitrary sitting there, and that arbitrary says the problem can be solved. The problem of the human mind can be solved. Now, that should tell you a lot. You throw an arbitrary ahead of a law. in order to get a law. That's called heuristic thinking. You postulate something and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, you postulate something else. Get the psychosis of somebody, though, who postulates that all cats are green and then can't unpostulate it. Is he in sad shape? He's in terrible condition if he does that. He says, the basis of all things are druidism, millions of words on the subject, our druidism. He just got caught in the groove in his own record, and he couldn't unpostulate the postulate, that's all. Now, let's look at that as a mechanical proposition, a therapy that we know about. Postulate. This person wasn't thinking. This person was continuing onward from a postulate which he could not undo. Having made the postulate, he was stuck with it. So if you ever do investigation or observation, for God's sakes, remember that. Never stick yourself with a postulate. And then have a feeling like you have to make the postulate good just because you made it. For heaven's sakes, have enough humility once in a while to say, what do you know? I was wrong. Throw it in the way. But they're natural laws. Let's divorce this thing from Hubbard's ideas or opinions. You know, when I tell you that everything that has been done on this exact line is written down and is known to you, I speak to you the truth. The only missing data there would be the things I thought of and threw away. I didn't even bother to keep notebooks on. I could think of, and somebody says that's a gap then in the research line. The heck it is. The heck it is. You can take these and get about 85 billion times more data than I threw away. And I didn't throw away any valuable data. The stuff was junk. I did an experiment one time. The great god Frogmagog, I invented him one morning. I said, by golly, I bet you he's got some therapeutic use. Wonder what this conscious mind is. What is this conscious mind? But we'll see, you ought to be able to hypnotize somebody. He used an awful lot of hypnotism in early research. God bless Charcot, that's all I got to say. And God bless Anton Mesmer. All right, these boys I was working with here and there were usually very good hypnotic subjects. Once in a while, I'd pick up an awfully bad hypnotic subject just to find out what made him tick, why he was so terrible as a hypnotic subject, because hypnotism was a wild variable. In science, in good investigation, look for the wild variable. Look for that thing which is wild, which isn't acting right, which acts this way, and that way. And there is where your use comes in of the natural law, which has 1,000 exceptions. You say, boy, you mean somebody knows a datum which doesn't operate right? And are there exceptions to it? Well, gee, that thing is probably the clue to the biggest doggondest puzzle. We can even go and look and find out what that puzzle is. There must be a puzzle there if you've got an erratic behavior. And if we can't break it down on what we know about the mind, we probably have opened the chapter of a whole new study. Anytime that happens. So remember this about wild variables. Well, anyway, I invented this great god Frogmagog for one single and solitary purpose. Find out if the conscious mind could be removed from the individual and be made to think and give orders to the individual thereafter. Did that in 1947. 1947, the first few months, I'd actually gone and gotten the actual books of psychoanalysis of Jung, Adler, and the rest of the boys, and I'd given them a good hard run. I burned the midnight oil on these things. Burned it hard because I was doing a review of what I thought they were doing. And I found out that I had steered a course over the hills and far away. I found out that Breuer's knowledge of hypnotism was very elementary, that I'd thrown an awful lot of data onto the track which had been picked up elsewhere and then said, well, that belongs to them. And that is not the case. So it became almost anything but the case. All right, Breuer's work indicated how people could be hypnotized and they had some connection with psychotherapy. That's an important datum. If he'd stuck with that, be famous forever. All right. Here we had the ability to put a person out and do something about his mind. What can we do about his mind? So I invent the great god Frogmagog. I say, all right, to this fellow, you are now the great god Frogmagog, and you will now step 2 feet to the right of yourself And you will thereafter do thinking and computing and give you all the advice which you need on the subject. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, snap, wake up. Great God, Throg McCart. And the guy would go around for days doing brilliant things, the like of which you never heard of. Just brilliant things. It's something like doing a long division of 15 numbers divided into 2100 numbers or something like that with right answers, calculating machine problems, all that sort of thing. How would he do these things? He would turn around and he would say, the problem is so-and-so-and-so-and-so. The answer is so-and-so-and-so-and-so. The great God Throgmorton. My idea was that somehow or other you could remove the mind from the influence of the reactive mind, which I'd already spotted. And if you could do this, you would have an unlimited, unaberrated self. And what was I doing? It takes 5 years to find out what I was doing. Otherwise, that's just another experiment. That's one of the fastest ways to theta clear, I know. Except, don't tell the guy he's also inside. Tell him to get out and stay out. And to monitor this thing from a distance. You got a theta clear, and it gives you a whole new method of theta clearing right there. Same galley. You're talking about hypnotism? Go on. Boom him out. Put him under deep trance and knock him out of his head if you can't do anything else. Shoot him for narcosynthesis and kick him out. Possibly you could do 1,000 things like this. But our later results tell us one thing else. He must get out in a highly self-determined state or he'll cave in. And the great God, Throgmorton, always caved in almost exactly 2 weeks. The self-determinism punch would last. Its highest level would be reached in 3 days, then would lower and would be gone in a few weeks. Interesting, isn't it? 5 years ago, the great God, Throgmorton. But investigation is something you do by proceeding from something which gave results and to which you can find no exceptions. And let me give you the other little clue to this, is look for exceptions. To hell with the proofs. You can prove anything, but find exceptions to what you've just thought of. Take objection to what you've just done. Believe it utterly while you're doing it, and then turn around and reject it completely and say there are exceptions to this thing. Do you know how long the word survival was under investigation for exceptions? It was under investigation for exceptions for 5 years. For 5 years, I refused to believe that survival had any basis tonight. And I kept trying to find something that wouldn't equate into the word survival. And I couldn't find anything for 5 years. And that's a long time to look. Now, that should tell you a great deal about auditing. Now, in the process of auditing, what you are doing is using a series of discoveries which were found by extrapolation, logical extrapolation. They were not found by amassing enormous amounts of data. Inductive logic was the basis of this research, and the invention of a mathematics of logic, which is not dissimilar to symbolic logic, made it possible to add up facts. Associate facts. But first one had to know that mathematics was a theoretical thing and that to apply it to the real universe, you had to recognize it as a theoretical thing and be perfectly willing to associate similarities, even though vague, rather than X's are always X's and C's are always C's. Now, you as an auditor start in on a case. You're using a whole lot of these laws. You're using a lot of them. They're there. They're there for you to investigate. There are two reasons why they might not be there for you. Is one, you are stuck on one of your own postulates. Another, that you are indoctrinated to such depth that you couldn't escape it. Another is that you have some sort of a fear or mores or something of the sort which you mustn't overthrow. And another one would be, they're not true. That would be the other. So in the way to investigate them evidently would be in this wise. would be to take those first few conditions there and apply them and find out if there's some reason, if this thing doesn't seem to be working for you, why you don't want it to work. It's always a good thing to ask yourself. Now, what would be your arbitrary with every pre-clear? Because when we look at a pre-clear, we are looking at the whole universe of Scientology. What arbitrary do we have to postulate the moment we look at a pre-clear? We follow the same course, actually, as the investigation itself. We have to postulate his case can be resolved. And by George, you better postulate it. The next one is do I want to resolve his case? And if you don't want to resolve his case, don't. But don't say to yourself, I ought to be able to want to resolve his case. You won't travel on it. Just ask yourself, this would scare into view this fact. Heck no. I think that women ought to be aberrated. Or, heck no, I think men really ought to be something or other. Or I think old men ought to be under the thumb. They're dangerous. If you fail to ask yourself, fail to make such a postulate, or find out why you can't make such a postulate about a case, you'll do the darndest thing sometimes. Quite to your own surprise, your own amazement. Why, every time you start to have this pre-clear, you keep changing your mind and giving in the wrong signals. You're operating on a postulate. Your postulates are only as valuable as you value them, or as they are workable. So in auditing, we're following very much the same course as was followed in research. A very strange fact, but the research line of this is quite consistent and use the line very closely, and the manifestations which you find are rather standard. Now, the higher common denominator we have reached today actually is so easy to generalize with that you can apply it to practically any case you meet with great ease. Let's start out with the first one. This fall could be called, incorrectly, a little lower echelon, an energy unit located inside his head. That's pretty correct. Pretty correct. You'll find occasionally, though, a pre-clear is big enough and relatively unaberrated, and he's a big thing. He thinks of himself as being a big guy. And when he steps out, he's a big guy. He's not just that big. He's maybe much bigger in his body. Fantastic. If you found somebody who was in pretty good shape, that would be his concept of himself. After you've worked for a little while, your concept of yourself ought to get bigger. You ought to feel yourself as pretty big. All right. Now, we know that. Now, let's define that unit just a little better. Let's find the unit in terms of capabilities rather than in terms of Nest Universe dimensions. This unit is capable of locating in space and time matter and energy, converting, conserving, altering in many ways, starting and stopping matter and energy in space and time. And what do you know? Is also capable of inventing space and time. And is probably capable of inventing so many more things than space and time, that space and time look like a little schoolboy's game. Don't underestimate what this thing can do, because along that line lies the advance in processing. Is what can we find that everybody can do? What could we find? Could he postulate, for instance, let's just take postulate and the proposition. Could you have your pre-clear suddenly say to himself, I am in the year Boozwoos. And the year Boozwoos contains a signboard, and that's all. And he could all of a sudden, it would be some trick like this. So don't inhibit yourself in the tricks. Don't inhibit yourself. Because the thing you're working with is completely uninhibited, which has been inhibited by becoming to believe it ought to be inhibited. Wonderful trick, you see. Now, if you could discover something that this thing could do that was in advance or different than space and time, which which ability had never been inhibited, you'd have an instantaneous state of clear. You see how that could work? I mean, if you could find something that was beyond space, time, matter, and energy, which he could do, that he could transfer over to, why, it would be the greatest of ease, but he could suddenly handle all this. 1,000 routes are open. 1,000 routes are open to you to a faster process than standard operating procedure for theta clearing. But this is a basic route. We know this works. We know this works. This even works on rough cases if you work with them for a while. Now, we know a lot of the reasons and a lot of the bugs you had to get out of a case in order to make this work. But just because I tell you, this is standard operating procedure, and just because, as a good auditor, you ought to know this thing colder than any turkey ever got, this isn't all the therapy there is. Because with this, we have discovered a strange fact. It can locate matter and energy in space and time. It can also locate, invent, change, convert, conserve, and upset time and space itself, and then locate matter and energy in it. Oh, boy. That sky's the limit. But if this confounded thing can do that, it isn't even vaguely limited by the mesh universe. Not even vaguely limited by the mesh universe. Nor by its own universes, nor by the concept of universes. Lord knows what it can do. And probably nobody has ever realized that himself. But the least that it can do is be so completely original, theoretically, that what it was original about would bear no relationship to the mesh universe. An artist starts out with this capability and spins in quick, because everybody is at great pains to tell him at every turn that he can't think of anything original. It's all been thought of before. This is the swan song and the end of every career as an artist. It's all been thought of before. The hell it has. I have written stories that hadn't been thought of before, but I never published them. And the reason why is they would have to have been thought of to be a publishable, acceptable communication line. They have to contain elements which have been thought of before. But you're trying to communicate with the story, and that's something else. So let's not get stuck on this and get all identified on this basis. Those of you see how simple that is. Yes, I've written stories which are completely original and utterly unintelligible to anybody else. Completely unintelligible. No communication at all. They weren't even written. They were really original. And of course, then you say, what were they? Right away, I would have to translate them into terms which were common denominator terms. The second I did that, I would have to change the story so that it had been thought of before, so that the person to whom you're communicating could receive it in the language. And the fact that they're told in language says all these words have been thought of before. So you see, well, what a far cry it is from the fact of originality to communicating what you think. Now, let's look at the basic condition of our theme. And let's follow very rapidly here, right straight through what he probably does. He's sitting there, and he's part of, quote, the main body of Theta, and for some reason or other, he starts setting up his own universe. We're not quite sure why. Maybe there is no reason. Maybe he just sets up his own universe. Maybe he got set up, and then he set up his own universe. Lord knows what. And the universe which he set up was set up with an unlimited, no arbitraries, except those which he imposed upon it himself, and well knew that he imposed upon it. So he set up this universe. And now let's get differences of universes. One preclear has set up a universe that doesn't have any time in it. He just set it up with a big space and hasn't got any time in it. So it's got no motion and no energy in it. Perfectly legitimate. Just because matter here is in motion is no reason why you've got to have only matter which is in motion. The only reason we have matter here that's in motion is because it's the easiest way to make matter. That's something like, the reason guys work is it's the harder way of doing something easy. And it's one of those things. There's no sense to it. All right, now let's say that his universe, or this other universe, it's a complete universe, except maybe it didn't have any green in it. And that was its sole lacking factor. All right, let's take another pre-clear, and we'll find out that his basic universe didn't have any pain in it. He never saw any necessity to put any pain in it because he didn't have any force in it. There was no force in this universe, but there was motion, but there wasn't any force. But one obtained motion simply by changing forms. And he didn't see any reason to have any substance to the forms. And if he had no reason to have any substance to the forms, he had no reason to have any force, so there was naturally no pain. And he depended, let us say, upon the people he peopled his universe with. If he peopled them at all, that's a specialized idea, you see. If he peopled this universe with a lot of people, why, he probably kept them interested in life simply with a lot of high-band ideas. Didn't have anything to do with pain. He set down a moral code and say that said so-and-so and so-and-so, and it said, people that do not dance are immoral. That was all there was to it. And there are people come around and asking, what's immoral? And he'd say, oh. That was all there was to it. The universe ran like a top. Nothing wrong with this universe. All right. There's hardly anybody set up a universe with this damn thing called sound. Let me tell you something about sound. Sound is only necessary because it's a 360-degree perceptic. And it's a good warning of danger. So it automatically takes a universe with a lot of danger in it to be a universe that has to contain sound. Now you follow that, don't you? It has to be a dangerous universe, or it wouldn't, or sound, it'd have no value. All right, we take a universe with no sound in it. Very interesting. How would you communicate? All right, let's communicate with light beams. Let's don't just interchange ideas or flows or something. Let's have communication in that universe, only let's have light beams. And people imagine a screen and imagine the light on the screen, and the light plays back and forth across the screen, and that communicates ideas. But gee, do you know what that means? That means the people of that universe would have to have the power of creating energy. No. And to a craven, cowardly, sort of a stupid, not even a craven, cowardly fellow, but just a dull, stupid kind of a fellow, like the kind of a fellow that would create the mesh universe, that would be unthinkable. Because that's probably his highest trick. Now, you've known some magician who would have some trick. He's a parlor magician, and he has a deck of cards, and they are very, very greasy, old, thumbed cards. And he comes in, and he says, take a card. And you take a card, you look at it carefully, and he says, you got it? And you say, yep. Now, he cuts the deck very carefully, looks at that card, and he says, now, put it back on the pile. You put it back on the pile, and he puts this other on top of it. Now he says, I'll tell you what card you took. He finally brings it out, and he says, there. Now, if you were to, you yourself had a little skill in this, would he be upset if you took that deck of cards and did a pass with him and said, well, have a card. He takes a card, you do a pass, put it back on the pile, you flip them over and say, there's your card. Or let him shuffle them. Or anything. He'd say it couldn't be done. Obviously it couldn't be done. He'd be a pretty dumb magician, truth be told. He probably would not have a capability of appreciating a higher level of magic if he thought this trick of one card was so damn valuable. Well, that's kind of like the meshed universe. The guy who thought this one up thought this one up this wise. Let's see, I can't think up anything but this one thing. That's force. Force. Well, I've got a pretty good idea that there are other universes around, and if this force suddenly goes through my time and I keep changing the time of the force, it'll pick up all these other universes and blow these good ideas into this universe. Because every time this force connects with any universe, of course, it'll explode it or something. You think of this one trick, this one stupid trick for anybody to think of, you see. Force. That's the easy one. That's the easiest idea to think of. Now, it could be that it's just sort of the common denominator of universes when they collided. Maybe everybody had his own universe and it all collided. But you know where it left you? You had a universe, you were sitting there. It might have been a universe without color. It might have, was usually a universe without sound. Sometimes it was. You had various things about this universe, and all of a sudden one day you were sitting there in your own universe and it went kapow! Gee, it had started you. And it would probably contain sound and electrical explosion. That's the common denominator of fear. Force wave with sound. If you want to scare anybody, use a force wave with sound. You've got it. People are very troubled about sound, much more troubled than they are about light. That tells them they couldn't handle sound. So maybe they held on to this, and they decided they'd study what this blast was. And they might be holding on to it ever since. They might be trying to protect their own universe from the blast, the last fleeting moment of it was all theirs, and they never got the moment of transition. And then they thought the blast had changed their universe around. They were in another universe. You see where that mix-up would come on the track? Kind of a mix-up it'd be. Possibly you will find this as one of the most aberrating factors in your pre-clear, I don't know. But we play around with home universe in the pre-clears and so forth. The evolution of beingness is at this moment a bit of a mystery. When we know more about the evolution of beingness, we will have easier cases. So, when it all boils down to the history of the track, we could be a little more romantic and involved about it and say here was a fellow and he was going around and he had these little illusions and he was building up a universe with these illusions and he was perfectly happy, cheerful about the thing. And one day he decided to show these illusions to another fellow he ran into. Or time and space coincidence. And he ran into this other fellow, and he said, what do you know, there's another being around here, and he showed him one of these illusions, and the other fellow says, that's nothing, look at this. And they sat down and had a nice contest. They decided who could build the nicest building or whatever. You had a dichotomy starting to work. And they built this, and they built that, and finally one of them got kind of upset with the other one and invented an illusion which blew up the other guy's illusion. There's an illusion band on the track that you almost drive a pre-clear mad processing because it's die yesterday. So it blows up your illusion, so you say you're dead yesterday and he's dead yesterday and therefore your illusions are right there. And be kind of scrambled, wouldn't it? So it would have a tendency to agree on something else. All right. However that may be, whatever this illusion is, if the messed universe is an inevitable average of all universes, which it might well be, it nevertheless moved in on your pre-clears universe. And possibly the track starts with a motivator and not a dead. Maybe still holding on to it. And maybe that's your occasional very occluded case. Your occasional very occluded case might be holding on to the explosion which blew up his own universe. It's a cinch he's holding on to some explosion because he won't let go. Now, why don't you run this on such an occluded case? Just an experiment. I'll study it. I'll look it over. I'll study it. I won't study it. I will study it. I won't study it. Find out what you got. Just take a gunshot at it. And my bet is that you'll give him some nasty somatics. Because, you see, he had to start out with a premise I didn't know, because here you find him not knowing. You have to have him stuck in some kind of an incident where he doesn't know because he doesn't know. Here's this fellow who has done the astonishing trick of forgetting how to create time and space. Well, that is silly. There is nothing sillier. Would you think, here were all the Thetans who could create time and space, and all of a sudden here's a Thetan that can't create time and space anymore? That is something like, just as astonishing, as here's a little 5-year-old boy and he's always liked ice cream, and one day he forgets there is such a thing as ice cream. He go up to him and you say, would you like an ice cream cone, Johnny? And he says, what's that? And he said, well, just like ice cream cone I gave you yesterday. You'd say, gee, the poor kid. What's the matter with this guy? Well, that's a Thetan who that's about the suddenness and the stupidity level of change of a Thetan who creates time and space, and all of a sudden all he can do is hang on to a body and obey orders and think of something once in a while. Pathetic when you come to think about it. But it really isn't pathetic at all. What are you doing falling for all this stuff about pain? What do you want pain for? It's not even useful. Not useful to you. Not useful to anybody else. If you want to have destruction, why put in pain? Because it's a strange thing that pain would be 1.8. Evidently not 1.81 or 1.82 or 1.73 on the tone scale. It's 1.8. And it is composed of hotness, coldness, and an electrical current. That's the anatomy and location of pain. And it is caused by an excess of randomity, which is at a certain wave level. Pain isn't a helter-skelter, hit or miss, just an impact. Pain is a very, very precise thing. Fascinating, a very precise thing. 1.8 on the tone scale. And it's caused by just so much. Because you see, if you give the guy just a little bit more randomity than that, he doesn't feel pain. He's gone right now. He's just gone. And that's another thing, is how does your preclear ever get the idea that he can be gone? How can you have a goneness out of a unit which can do time and space and energy and matter and all sorts of things? How do you get a goneness? How can he be gone? There isn't any place to which he could went. How can he be unconscious? He's capable of inventing consciousness. What's he doing going unconscious? Well, all the answers to these questions are right there in possibly an agreement. If you feel pain, I'll feel pain. Only I never agreed with anybody to feel pain. Now, he deals with and experiences best illusions of his own. That's his highest level of knowingness. Next best, he experiences reality, and next best to that, experiences delusion. That's your gradient scale of knowingness. If they ever added up, they would be no illusion, and then junior to that would be no mess, and junior to that would be no delusion. You can probably get a lot of ideas out of the illusion, but I'm important. Now, all these things are, to some tiny or vague degree, here in the mess universe, energy. And they locate and are in time and space. But I won't say whose time and space. An illusion is somebody pushing his illusion into your time and space, if you want to define it that way. All right. Enough discussion on this. We have then a plot of a track which will pretty well work out on an E-meter with your preclear. And you want to look over the track and the E-meter and preclear. You'll find out that he has some kind of a history like I just described to him. He was sitting there in a home universe, he called. There's separation from theta, you get a bop, home universe, where you get a little rise, and everything was very fine. And then, all of a sudden, there was the messed universe. The home universe was gone. And you'll get him thinking, oh my, I wonder if I wish I knew what the secret of the messed universe was.
There isn't any secret to the mess universe. That was its secret. The secret of the mess universe is you can create a mess universe anytime you want to. But if you held on to and tried to grab hold of and stop the encroachment of the mess universe, not just change your wavelength, if it happened in your time space suddenly enough, you're here. And if you let it go on by and to hell with it and just shift it over in another time span, you've got your own universe someplace else and you're not here. The essence, the very essence of simplicity. Those are two classifications. There's them that's here and them that's not here. And them that's not here, we're not going to worry about, because the funny part of them that's not here, they're probably having a perfectly happy time someplace else in time, space, and maybe a time-space unit which runs diagonally across this room, by the way. I mean, you see, it has no bearing. Time relationship, space relationship. There is no space or time beyond the space or time necessary to hold the energy which you create. But if you have the energy, you get the idea. What's so baffling about it? And the only thing that's really baffling about it is you can create the whole kit and caboodle out of thin nothing. You can create the whole thing. There you are. There is no secret. That would be the hardest thing that you could ever convince anybody, but that's a typical mess universe fact. There's no secret. What's the secret of the mess universe? That there's no secret, of course. That would be right there in the groove with the mess universe. That would be the mess universe's best trick. It makes the obvious and hides it. Because it's a crude, relatively unworkable, solid, rather onerous, sort of a dope head's dream who wasn't too bright. And if it's the inevitable average, brother, I don't think much of some of the other universes that collided to make this one. Because it's dopey, this one. It's not a bright universe. Its total value evaluation is force. It's all down on the force band. And that's silly, because something that's on the force band won't work. The one thing that won't work is force. Under no circumstances has force ever worked. An idea any day of the week can lick the pants off of force. All these great flaming suns, all these huge inimitable expanses, all these tremendously, tremendously cold and inhospitable spaces, all these dead planets and dead stars could be reduced to a pile of utter nothingness of rubble by an idea. You don't believe it? Oh, you don't believe it. The only thing I can ask you to do is make a clinical experiment on it. Try it in a small little sphere of action. Take somebody you know who believes in tremendous force and think of the insignificant idea which would defeat him utterly. You think you actually have to be able and willing to handle force. But how do you handle force? With force? No. You can't handle force with force, because that gives you ridges and more force. You see how that is? You can't handle force with force. It isn't that force begets force, or he who dies by the sword lives by the Bible, or anything. I mean, whatever it is, I'm not scrambling that up on purpose, really. That was just a slip of the Testament. Here's... And by the way, that it is to a large extent a book of force, which is where it falls down. The only time religion has ever fallen down was when it believed it had a god of force. A god of force can always be licked. You can take the mightiest cyclotrons in the world that exist today, and if you just get the proper idea, they will become dust. Force has to be handled, maybe, by force. But the actual fact is that an idea alone can vanquish force. If you had a command and control over space and time the way you should have,
You could simply onto another time track any force that ever came near it. Now, let's put this very practically. Very practically. The cat, Tom, is eating the little mouse, about to eat the little mouse, Jerry, in the comic cartoon. And Tom is sitting there, and he's about to stuff Jerry into his mouth when, all of a sudden, Jerry is sitting on his hand, and Jerry looks in this palm, and he won't let Tom see what's in his hand.
Those big, stupid cat says, what you got?
And Jerry says, and it's gone. Yeah, what you got? It doesn't take any idea at all. The only reason why you ever have trouble, if you ever do have trouble defeating force, is because you just don't think of the idea. And usually because you overreach with your idea. You haven't any concept of how simple the idea has to be. You want to get complicated because you know it's lots of force, so you think you want to have lots of idea. It's not order of magnitude. They don't follow the same order of magnitude. Actually, they go quite in reverse. They go quite in reverse. It's the more force there is, the less idea it takes to handle that force. Because an idea is awful powerful, and you can get an idea so powerful that it'll just shoot above, around, and over and through this mass and this force, and it just never hits it. So remember that in processing a free clear. Your idea can be way, way, way too good to defeat this thing which is nothing to handle. It's force. All you're trying to get him to do is handle force, create and destroy force, which includes creating and destroy matter, energy, space, and time. Well, now, if you try to use these big, complex ideas, and you erect these treadmills, and then you have to have the weather clock, so the weather's in the northwest section, and then you've got to have this, and you've got to have that, and you do this, and you do that, and something or other, and then you make long lists of this, and then you have him running around the living room, and then we put up a wire cage around him while he's processing, and then these forces capes or something, or some other force can hit him, and that. All you had to say with him, you could step a foot back of your head. It's all the idea that took. All of a sudden he gets a new idea. You want to know what happens? He doesn't change in location, time, and space. He just gets a new idea. He's the idea. He has that capability. You're not transferring a thing. And that's the first mistake you can make, is thinking that you're transferring and handling a thing. You're not. It's not an object made out of force and matter. You're handling something which is so much more powerful than the atom bomb, and so much more changeable than a woman's mind, that there's just no comparison. You're handling this thing of terrific capability, and it handles so easy. And all you're asking it to do is to do the easiest thing there is to do. That's handle force. Now, if you don't believe force is easy to handle, you say, think of it this way. You've got to space the force in terms of time. If you try to handle a force in too short a space of time by a force, it'll really finish you. Here's a guy with a rifle. All right, he walks up, he's going to shoot you with a rifle. Well, you've waited until he's walked up to you. And what are you doing with the body? Anyhow. Well, the thing to do is he walks up to you with a rifle. All you had to do is whisper in his ear. He won't pull the trigger. He gets the sudden idea the breech is going to explode. What are you doing with a body anyhow? You get a body, you see, and you have a good time with this body, and you say, well, it takes a body to handle force. Yes, it takes a body to stop force. That's perfectly true, and it's a lousy idea. It's a terrible idea, actually. Why aren't you in the kind of a state that all you have to do is mock up a body which everybody can see and know is there? That's all. And somebody comes up with force and they say, we're going to destroy your body. That's shorthand for we're going to arrest you, or we're going to hit you, or we're going to use force on you. We're going to take time and space away from you. We're going to impose time and space on you. Something of the sort like this. They reach out, they say, come along with. There's nothing there. You stand there and say, what's the matter with you, bud? Because that's really the first and only mistake you ever made on the time track. You tried to stop force with force. And the second you tried to stop force with force, it left you in a condition of being handled by force from there on. And right now, you think it takes force to handle force. There isn't any reason why you couldn't wish that up in the air instead of having to toss it. Just wish it up in the air and have it hang there. There isn't any reason why you can't do this. But don't tell me that you're going to do this while you're still in the body. You still have to have a body. You still have to have for yourself this rare and fantastic privilege of being, they permitted you to feed a body and work a body and earn a living for the body and so on the theory that you have to have a body. All right, let's take the theory, you have to have a body, and what comes out of it instantly? All right, I'll have a body. Doesn't have to be a forced body, though. Your thirst for making things automatic, of setting up ridges that would operate ridges so you wouldn't have to concentrate on them at all or give them new ideas all the time, brought you into a condition of a reliance upon the body. You say, the body can handle force, I can't handle force. That's the same statement. When you say, Joe will always dig the ditch, and Bill will always fill out the forms, you're saying at the same time, whether you realize it or not, I need to have the ditch dug by a forced body, and the forced body which I'll use to do this is Joe, and the forms that will be filled out will be done by, they have to be filled out by a forced body. Why don't you just dream up the form, huh? You dream up a filled up form. Somebody asks you to make out a form. What the hell would you be doing making out forms if you didn't have a body? It'd just be a body that, you know, ration books, petrol books, this book, that book. You wouldn't need those. All right, let's take money. Now, there isn't any reason why you can't think up a 10-pound note and hand it to the fellow and have it go on into circulation for the next 10 years. There's no reason why you can't do this. What do you want the money for? You say it's nice to have. Well, that means mess is nice to have. Great. You confessed right at that moment you can't invent mess. You said, I can't create mess. I have to acquire or steal it. I have to go through this legal tender proposition in order to acquire some other mess somebody else has got. Interesting, isn't it? When we get into the field of force, we get into the field of complete inability. This utter degrading inability. And that's something that you've got to cure with your preclear. What's all this inability? I had a fellow one time invented the term abstrix. I was talking to him for 3 days, a year or two ago, about the only thing that you have ever been granted is an inhibition. The only present which has ever been made to you is an inhibition, the ability not to do something. It's the only thing anybody ever gave you is the ability not to do. Nobody ever gave you the ability to do. Ability not to. Because notice, most of the time when somebody gives you the ability to do, they have to tell you you can't do it first. Then they proceed to teach them. All right, the ability not to do becomes very interesting. And he formed it up, and he began to listen to people when they talked, and they said, you can't do this and you can't do that. Nearly everything they said to him out in this human society was, you can't do it, you mustn't do it, there is a barrier there, there's a barrier here, and he listened to this. And that's a good drill for you, by the way. Open up your ears for the next day or so and just listen to Homo sapiens talking, and you'll find out that he's telling you there's a barrier in time, there's a barrier in space. You can't move here, you can't move there, you can't do this, you can't do that. He's a walking mass of can't, because that's all he was ever given was can't. Because nobody could give him can. He could. Good already. Horrible joke, isn't it? Well, this young fellow invented the word abstract. And that meant restrictions. The abstraction of restriction. An abstraction of restriction was a method of creating space and time. And you're right, you see. I mean, that's very correct. If you create space and time, you have this condition. All right. Abstracts. You listen to Homo sapiens the next day or so. He's saying, you can't do this, and I can't do that, and you can't do this, and we can't do that. This is impossible, and that is unobtainable, and this cannot be reached. And that's all he talks about. If he ever says can, he says, well, we can do it if we are allowed. He always adds in that he has to be permitted. This fellow got this concept, by the way, and if you don't think this is a powerful concept, listen to what happened to him. He was in love with a girl. He went over, he taught her the principle. She'd not been happy with her husband, and she had a little baby. And he went over and taught this to this girl, and they turned around and they told the husband, go fly a kite. And they went up through, up the pole, so to speak, both of them. And you say, well, nothing good could have come of this. Nothing good could have come of it, but he promptly got a job for about $1,200 a month as a mathematician. He'd never quite been able to make the grade before. He got a job with one of the big aviation companies because he solved two of the most imponderable imponderables in the field of aviation, one after the other, and took it down one morning and threw it on the desk of the works manager and said, there's a solution to this, there's a solution to that, and I want a job because I keep turning things out like this all the time. And they gave him a job, and he got the kind of a job so he never has to report to work. That's an abstract, and it's very powerful. If you want to send your preclear up the pole fast, you just convince him that there is no limit and there is no barrier. Now, he's liable not... You see, if you've got the knowledge of what limits and barriers there have been, and then you get this other concept, you're perfectly safe. You just move on out of it. But if you get this concept that there are no barriers, and you all of a sudden vaguely understand the concept, or something clicks on the subject, and you have no understanding of it, there's no track, you don't know the composition of the messed universe, or an illusion, or anything else, you just simply soar. Boom! And then 6 months later, people are picking up the pieces. Fascinating limitations. For instance, Kipling's great poem, If, tells you what to do, and every line of it is an inhibition. It infers that this isn't natural. It infers that this is just horrendous. This is magniloquent. If you were this way, that would be terrific. And usually you can't quite obtain that, but there it is, and this is the big goal. And he makes this big hurrah, hurrah crunch. And I like his poetry a lot. But he does this hurrah on that if. And I noticed that the lousiest poem he ever did really was If. And because it says, look here. If you could do all these things, you could do all these things, and so on. And he paints this little tiny molehill, see? There's this little tiny molehill, and he says, boy, if you could climb that, you'd really be a man, my son. Guy said, God, I must be low. Gee, look where I must be if to climb this molehill makes me up high. You get the idea. That's the sort of backwards computation you run into consistently. Now, all of these things are actually the guilt around standard operating procedure. What's an engram? Boom with force. What's it do? It makes the guy meet it with force. How do you solve it? You stop the guy from meeting it with force. It's awful simple, isn't it? And force is energy, space, and time. So there are 80 ways you can go about solving it. One of the ways you can go about solving it is just keep removing him from him as a body until he's outside of his own force zone. Of course, he'd get well in an awful hurry. All you have to do is get him outside of his own force zone, and then he can sit there and figure this out. But what chance has he got to figure it out if he keeps getting hit by forces all around him and through him and in him and everything else? He doesn't have much of a chance. Now, if he'd just go sit quietly on a pink cloud someplace, invent a pink cloud in some other time strata, and sit quietly on it for a little while, he would be able to dope out from what he knows here, or this. He'd be able to rehabilitate his ability to do this and his ability to do that and so forth. That would be a very ideal way to go about it, just have a very full education on it and then get booted out and put into fairly good shape somehow or other and then dream yourself up a pink cloud and sit on it and let the messed universe go to hell for a little while. And you'd turn up with the answers that you needed to make yourself able to operate in the messed universe. Now, you wonder why anybody would operate in the messed universe. Well, I'll tell you why they operate in the messed universe. Randomity. You read in the axioms, you find randomity. That's right. The messed universe, mighty big target. If you can eat up the messed universe, depopulate it and square it around, you'd always be able to sit down, take the facsimile of having done something to the messed universe and give it to somebody you invented to play football with. Randomity. Action. Unfortunate, most people don't think there's enough value in randomity to do anything for the sake of randomity. But they're low tone scale. You get... Almost anybody will do something for the sake of randomity when you put up the tone scale a little bit. It should have a project and a goal and an end and square it around. So you just take off a nice big project someplace or other and say, I think I will. It doesn't matter what you say. You can get interested in it and everything else. You don't have to say, I think I will destroy the mess universe. You could also say, I think I will build this big universe that has nothing but force in it and see how well it gets along, and then one day I'll cashier the whole work. And I think I'll take off 2 months of my space time for the project, and let's see, how long is 2 months of my space time? Well, that will be 100 billion years of the universe time which I'm going to create. It's all satisfactory. That's perfectly satisfactory reasoning. Go ahead and do it. Or you could say right here on Earth, I think I'll clean up all the vinegar works in England. The trouble with vinegar works is they need cleaning up. That's just what you do. Then you decide you get a little society together and you clean up vinegar works. The whole trouble is that when people do this, they don't realize that they're dealing with a very elementary principle. That is, it's just randomity. They want action, they want motion, so they have to have a stage and scene for motion. Anything serves as motion. Just anything. You could postulate some kind of a motion that is going forward and create the motion and then do something about it. And how often do you find somebody doing something about that? You find people running all over the place, particularly in politics, inventing the most astonishing and horrible atrocities just so they can do something about them. And I wouldn't put it past some of these people in politics to do these astonishing and horrible atrocities and get them finished up just so they can go in and do something about it. As a matter of fact, Japan used to do that. The Japanese used to create the incident so they could create the war. Did it constantly. They would go out, they send a couple of Secret Service boys out and have a couple of their own troops shot, and then have the government that, where the troops were, apologizing, and if the government didn't apologize, then they could go in with troops. But they really kill the troops. Anything to create randomity. Now, standard operating procedure for theta clearing here is self-explanatory. The only things that I would call your attention to with regard to it is that if you ask the pre-clear to be rather than move, you probably will get further. That just skidded by in the dictation of this. And it's something that should be punched up. If you have a copy there, you're going to use, make a notation on it. Should be, ask the pre-clear to be a foot back of his head. And then if he is, but the only reason why you've got directional areas there, the only reason you've got directions, is just so that he gets something to be in relation toward. He wants to be in relationship to something like dimension and time. Now, when it comes to this negative step, it doesn't have the workability which it might have. Will occasionally work. When you speak of orientation, when the time you've got to step three, it is move. Because you've got somebody so bogged down by force, he will use force, and it'd be a very high level to have him use force in time and space. That wouldn't be true of a step one, so we have a little further differentiation on a step one. Let's look over here at step four, ridge running. I'll make you a bet. I don't believe any of you have used ridge running. Worth a nickel. Why not? I'll bet you two or three of the cases that you're having trouble with that I have heard of vaguely here and there will resolve by ridge running. You haven't used it.
Nothing.
You haven't met.
Never got there.
I said it yesterday. I would like to read it for. I've never met
you. Oh, have you met five?
Yes.
Have you processed a 5?
Yes.
And he won't do a 4?
Well, he said there was none.
Well, what'd you do? Hit 5 and then go dead X and then boom?
Try 4. Hit 1, 2, 3, 4 in a normal manner before I arrived at 5.
And you didn't do 4?
I didn't do 4.
You haven't met a 4, huh? I've met 2 or 3 4s that I don't think would have solved easily on anything else. These guys had to know something was happening before it could even vaguely happen. Now, here we have orientation in the Theta universe. Pardon me, in the Mess universe. Shorthanding what I'm saying here. Orientation in the Theta universe. I'd like to add to this. Why don't you orient him in his own universe? Huh? How about thinking about that? That occur to you? All the way down the line when it says orientation, remember that it can mean orient him in the Mess universe or orient him in his own universe. And they'd be 2 different processes. You'd have him invent some time, invent some space, and then orient himself in it. And the possibility is that this would be a superior technique to orienting him in the Mesh universe. I haven't tried it. I just look it over and I say, well, there's a technique sitting there. Orienting him in his own universe. You might have him going right back to his own universe. Because you see, his universe isn't located in space. In relationship to mess space. It's just elsewhere. In that it is not here. Because here means this space. It does not mean a time difference. Alright. You might do a lot by just asking a fella to describe to you what kind of a universe he had up to the time it blew up. Or whether it blew up. What happened to it? You might say, what kind of a universe was it? And just keep, he keeps describing what kind of a universe it was and orient yourself this way and orient yourself that way in it and describe it some more, and that might be the fastest technique which we have. As I say, I haven't tested it. You're liable to find all sorts of weird things. You're liable to find some pre-clear ears that can't get color, had never heard of color. Lee at the Mesh universe, and he hasn't seen it since. I mean, it's just a concept that he never got as his own idea. It wasn't part of his home universe or anything like it. You might recover to him all of his skills just by doing that. Interesting thought. Now, with regard to the general material which is here, we have an organization, really, which you have been using for some little time. You might give me a comment. You might give me a comment. Have you found this working with your bricklayers?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Where have you found it falling down? Has it fallen down any place?
Yes, any place I've found it has anything falling down. In fact, the figures of certain lack of confidence in what you're doing with them.
By lack of confidence in you?
The lack of confidence in the particular thing that's being done.
They are very messed down, you know? They what does it mean? You know? Am I liable to be able to have 9,000 pounds a year and a large sized car and 2 wives if I wanted, as I say, to clear. Wouldn't it be much better to be a mess clear, that's all.
Well, alternatively, in order to judgment against it, you use luck, obviously, in principle. That's fine. But I'm not sure that this will make me well. Are you sure?
Okay. I have an answer for that. Audit outside of your body. Now that's the best remedy I know for that, offhand. Is audit outside of your body and make the sound and auditing commands emanate from out of your body and don't have a body at all while you're auditing. Well, I think you get results.
The auditor has to do that.
Well, you asked me, you made a statement. That's very, very fatal, by the way, to pose me a problem. Most always have a solution because there aren't very many serious problems in the best universe. It's kind of a silly universe.
It's a universe everybody's been working so hard to solve because it didn't have anything to solve in it.
All right. What business have you got sitting there in a body auditing anybody anyhow? Let's be tough about this. Come on, what's the idea? What's the idea?
Even if you don't, the creature still identifies with your body.
It's not important. This is not important. This is not important. If you had your sound of your voice was rolling out a thing and he identified you, I tell you, once upon a time we did do this. We made a picture of an angel and made it talk to a psychotic. The psychotic was so upset about people that I said, well, we slaughtered him without a person. How simple. We did. He got well. He got well very fast. So this is a big thought, you see. I mean, you could say now you'd really be much better off without a body. Look at me. All this work. And you say, well, right here, and put a doll there or something, you see. And make the doll's jaw move or something so he feels like the talk is coming from there. And you say, now pick up the doll and see if there are any wires connected to it. Now look in the back of the doll and see if there's any radio connections with it. That's right. Now put me back down on the desk chair. That's right. Put me down in the little doll's chair. That's fine. That's fine. All right. Now how about you being a foot back of your head? Of course, you could say at the same time and just as fast as that, every night before you go to bed hereafter, you will say your prayers. And you will remember to say your prayers to Bill Spinbin, HDA. And remember that he is God. You do that, too. If you went at this wide disagreement with the best universe, that's obviously what you are. That's all. Well, I've given you a solution to overcome this objection. I don't see why you don't find it a satisfactory solution. Here I'm sitting here talking to you without a body.
We know that, and we don't identify you with your body. But it is difficult to be clear. Always identify you with your body, and the other creature, it doesn't make any difference. You could be outside. The nice, easy, happy creature doesn't make any difference. You're in your body, outside your body, on the...
Well, what are you doing filling up the universe and letting go make their own universe a bunch of mean, ornery, cantankerous pre-clears?